Our next case this morning is Martin against Snyder.
May it please the court.
Mr. Martinez.
May it please the court. There are three issues that I would like to address today. First is the erroneous dismissal of appellant's right to marry claim. The second is the erroneous dismissal of Ms. Stolka's equal protection claim and qualified immunity. Now, under Turner versus Sapley, the Supreme Court held that prisoners' fundamental rights...
May I ask what difference any of this makes?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Your Honor.
The marriage has occurred.
That's correct.
Any request for injunctive relief is moot.
Correct.
So what would the damages be?
Well, the damages are the deprivation of their constitutional rights. And, I mean, civil rights... Oh, I'm sorry.
Look, you have to be concrete about damages. What would the injury be? If one of the parties had died during the period between which the marriage should have occurred and it did occur and there were effects on the estate, one, you could see that. But somebody in prison can't sue for loss of consortium or anything like that. So what's the actual injury?
Well, the actual injury is the district court deferring to the prison official's whims as to when prisoners can and civilians can exercise their fundamental rights.
No, the question I'm asking is what the plaintiffs lost. The right under Turner against Safley is a right to be in a particular legal arrangement. It's not a right to see your spouse, spend time with your spouse, to have a child with your spouse, or anything like that. All the normal attributes that marriage brings don't apply to prisoners. So all Turner is about is establishing the legal relationship. And I'm trying to figure out what value that is that can be compensated in damages when the legal relationship is established a year late.
Okay. Well, the civil rights statute, and Congress has intended to allow for, at the very least, nominal damages for a deprivation of someone's right to marry.
And what's the source of that? Kerry against Pippa says that nominal damages are available for violations of notice and an opportunity to a hearing, but it suggests that that's not a universal rule, that there's not nominal damages for every conceivable constitutional violation without showing of concrete laws. That's why I'm asking this question.
Well,
since Kerry is not a universal nominal damages rule, that's why I'm interested in what the concrete laws would be.
Fair enough. I think it would be inappropriate at this time for me as appointed counsel coming to argue this case that was dismissed before discovery could occur to comment on what the appellant's damages would be here.
Mull over what you think the possible discovery would have discovered.
I'm sorry?
What do you think in your wildest imagination that you could uncover by discovery that would bring in an element of damages to the failure to be married in Stanter?
Well, I certainly, I can't cite anything specifically now, but I'd be happy to brief it afterwards.
Well, we'll mull it over right here and see how we come.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I certainly recall seeing numerous cases in which appellants who had their constitutional rights violated, but then later the prison officials, allowed them to exercise their rights.
I'm talking about this very specific the situation involving the marriage. There was no right to be married in any particular immediate time. Am I correct in my analysis so far?
That they did not have a right to be married in?
To be married immediately. We decided we wanted to get married next Saturday, and the prison has to let them be married. There's an accommodation problem.
That's right. The prison regulations have
Let me assume that the prisons did not accommodate it appropriately, and we're back to Judge Easterbrook's question. What could you conceive would be the possible damages? Not researching, just from your common sense and knowledge as a practicing member of the bar, what you would be able to find that the party's lost. Okay. And the only party you can talk about is your party.
Well, I suspect that they would be able to claim that they had, you know, emotional damages as waiting for 18 months.
42 U.S.C. 1997 E sub A says no prisoner can recover for emotional damages in the absence of a physical injury.
Fair enough.
See, I led you down a primrose path. And I want you to know, I want to find out what it is you think we should do. You had to argue about
it. Here's what I see. I see numerous cases in which courts allow claims to proceed in which there is no injunctive relief even being requested, and yet there is the claim for the infringement of their constitutional right and to pursue nominal damages, which are often awarded in such cases when qualified immunity is not involved, and because the civil rights statute allows for attorney's fees, thus recognizing that there are going to be cases in which there are no real substantial damages, and yet the fundamental right at issue is important enough to litigate and seek relief for the plaintiff.
That sounds like a request for an advisory opinion.
Well, it's not an advisory opinion, Your Honor, because we have actual damage here that occurred in the sense that we have appellants who wished to get married, followed all of the procedures in that place, and yet the defendant, for rationales unknown to the court at this time, precluded them from doing so. And at the same time, as alleged in the complaint, there were people who violated the same sexual misconduct.
Suppose a member of Congress files a lawsuit saying that the military operations in Iraq cannot be conducted without a formal declaration of war, seeking nominal damages for violation of the Constitution. Right? Member of Congress can't show any injury, claims nominal damages.
Well,
you know, these suits have been filed. They've been dismissed for lack of standing.
Exactly. We have standing here.
But you don't have standing unless you have injury. And that's the nature of the question that Judge Bauer and I are asking. What's the injury? And you've named two possibilities. One possibility is nominal damages. Well, nominal damages are not injury. And the other is emotional distress. And there's a specific federal statute barring recovery for prisoners' emotional distress.
Well, it would be the same type of injury that, for example, in Scheimer versus Washington, this court recognized. And that was a case in which prison regulation precluded guards from writing to clemency boards directly on behalf of prisoners. And the court held there, even though, just like this case, there's no necessary actual monetary damages, that they had a claim and overruled.
But there was something very real, because without those, I assume their argument was without the clemency letters, there was a greater likelihood that they would continue in custody,
mm-hmm.
if it was, you know, a clemency situation. So that's something very real.
Yeah.
That's very real. You know, do you have a case that's like you don't have a right to marry case?
Well,
and that's what makes it hard for you. You got a hard road to hoe, given the nature of this right to marry and the fact that the only thing you have is, you know, they're not married, but they can't do anything that regular married people do.
Well, I think there are cases, and from the circuit, as a matter of fact, Williams versus Lane, which involved inmates who were in protective custody who were not allowed the same religious freedoms that other inmates were allowed. And this court overturned a district court's dismissal of that case. Same scenario. No, you know, actual damages, in your words, in that sense, but the violation of their rights to freedom of expression.
But I'm assuming there they wanted to participate in some religious ceremony at the prison. So there was something real they were being deprived of, that is, the right to practice their religion, go to services, whatever it is, have those materials in the jail, be visited by the minister. I mean, that's what those cases usually go to.
Well, what I hear being advocated today is that if indeed, and recall that at the time of the district court's decision, they had not been allowed to marry. There was an injunction.
Right.
Exactly. But there may be some kinds of things for which only prospective relief really works. And had the ban not been lifted and had your clients not gotten married, this would be a live case.
Mm-hmm. Well,
there we are. I mean, I assume your client didn't want to turn down the marriage in order to preserve the litigation.
Well, of course not, but the issue is that they should not have to sue and not have to appeal to to have those rights vindicated. What I'm hearing advocated today is that prison officials can, at their whim, ignore the exercise of fundamental rights guaranteed by the Constitution, and then as soon as they are sued, as soon as it becomes difficult for them to defend, they can just drop the claims, and then we can have a repetition over and over and over again of the same...
Not, I trust, with respect to your client, who are not planning on getting married over and over and over again.
Well, not to my client, but...
Right, but you're not entitled to litigate on behalf of anybody else. This is not a class action.
That's correct, Your Honor. At the same time, the prison policies which allow this type of this type of deprivation to occur without any actual procedures in place to dictate how it should be followed is something that can be repeated over and over again. And it doesn't just apply to, Turner does not just apply to the right to marry, it applies to all fundamental rights.
Mm-hmm.
I see that my time is up.
Thank you very much, Kim. Mr. Schmidt.
Your Honors, I'm John Schmidt on behalf of the four defendants, I believe, who are all officials of the Illinois Department of Corrections. And I'm going to be honest, since my brief solely addressed the merits of the issues and did not anticipate the point that Your Honors have brought up and are concerned with, I'm not going to present argument as to the merits, as Mr. Martinez did not have an opportunity to. And I'm simply, unless there are questions that the court would like to address to me, I feel it's more appropriate for me to simply stand on the arguments in my brief. And if there are no questions, I'll simply sit down.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mr. Schmidt.
Thank you.
And Mr. Martinez, we recruited you and your law firm to undertake it. I know we gave you a hard time, but sometimes we recruit lawyers into cases just because they are a little difficult. So we thank you very much.
Either the judges are difficult or the questions are difficult.
Certainly. If the parties would like to file supplemental memos on the basically on the question whether we still have an Article III case or controversy within 10 days, we would welcome their receipt.
Very much.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Right. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.